Yes. Thank you, Margaret. A few years ago, a good friend of mine, Sue, called me up late one night during the week, very unlike her. And she said, "Denise, I'm so sorry to bother you, but I just have to talk." "Sue, what's up?" "I just came back from my pro-life committee meeting, and I am so upset. And I just have to debrief." And I'm like, "Oh, my gosh, what happened?" She said, "Well, you know, we've been together about 5 months." And she goes, "It hasn't been, you know, the most organized. We struggle with time. We talk circles and circles and circles. But we do eventually make some decisions, and we've been getting along okay. Tonight was a night like no other. We were planning, trying to make some decisions, and we'd started having our disagreements that we typically work through, but all of a sudden it was escalating, and people were exchanging those words. And then it culminated with someone standing up, putting their hands on the table, and saying, "I'm out of here." And accidentally, his binder went flying and hit someone in the chest, right? So that may sound like an extreme story. It's not. But for some of our parishioners, when they step out of the pew and when they offer their gifts in parish, it's like a stormy, cloudy day. They step up for a variety of reasons, and they weather through the storm and can't wait till the storm breaks, and then they never step up again. Fortunately, we have some great stories. More like a sunny day, very vibrating, or vibrant, giving them life. And I have another great story, just the opposite of what Sue had. So Barb, several years ago, was invited to be on what was called an envisioning team. So her parish was creating a strategic plan of growth for the next year. They were going deep into quite a framework to create priorities, goals, and all of this was about growing the parish in a multitude of ways. Now, Barb will tell you today, if she was standing next to me, that back then she was a nominal Catholic. That's how she described herself when she does her witness story. She went to Catholic schools, and here she was. The first meeting, she said, "Well, I finally found out why there's a candle burning in the sanctuary." Of course, when she asked that question, I was quite impressed she knew it was the sanctuary. But anyway, and she was impressed herself. She said, "I did remember a few things from Catholic school." So Barb entered into this process because later in life, she just felt connected to her childhood, her family, her parents died. She needed a home that connected her, and she would sit in the pew, as she would say, whenever she felt like it. Yet, as a busy bank executive, she gave of her time for this strategic planning process. So Barbara and I stayed in touch throughout this process. And while there were some very practical things that were being discussed, there were also spiritual matters that was being discussed. After all, it was for the growth of the parish. I watched Barb transform. It was a delight. I was praying for her the entire time. She would talk about the practicality of the experience, how well organized it was. They always got out on time, started on time. They had some really good discussions of disagreement, but did really well collaboratively making decisions. But what was most important for me to hear, she was falling in love with Jesus. She all of a sudden found herself going to Mass every day. Yeah. From someone who I'll sit in the pew whenever, to I'll go every Sunday, to I want some daily Mass. And then, toward the end, it was about an 8-month process. I'll never forget this piece. She called me up, and I said, "Well, Leah, how'd it go? Tell me about it, Barb." And she said, "Well, we have got a great plan. We're thrilled. We can't wait to start implementing and getting going." And she goes, "I just can't get enough of daily prayer." And I said, "Oh, go tell me about your prayer life." She said, "Well, you know, I searched around and I was looking for different books." And she goes, "I found this great prayer aid. I don't know if you know about it, but I pray it every day." And I said, "Barb, what is it?" She said, "The Liturgy of the Hours." And she learned how to use those ribbons, right? So this was before we had it on the app, right? She was that invested. She knew how to turn the ribbons and where to start. She found that on her own. Now that, it's a true story. Barb and I are very good friends. 10 years later, we're in a faith-sharing group together. And she always goes back to that process. It made all the difference. And then the parish created the space for her to continue. what was initially transactional. I'll give you, she's a bank executive, I'll give you my talent so I can have a pew whenever I feel like sitting in it, to something meaningful and out of love for Jesus. She since has been on evangelization committees. She does quite a bit. So it's a beautiful story. So we have those stories too. So both of those may seem extreme. One end, someone got hit accidentally and someone wanted to leave. Oh, I forgot to tell you the punchline to that story. So let's go back to that. So the one that pro-life, when I asked her what they were discussing what they were going to do on Respect Life Sunday. Right? So, do you know that your parish has a reputation of what it's like to step out of the pew and into ministry? So, of course, Barb talked about her experience, and so did Sue. And there are experiences in between. You do have a reputation among the parishioners. So over the 15 years that I was working with, you know, thousands of priests, lay leaders, bishops, hundreds of parishes, this would always come up. The handout that I have for you today, there are some activities on here that we won't have time to do, but I'd like to point them out to you so that perhaps you leave here and do them with your colleagues, for sure for yourself. But I do want to give you just a minute. Top of heart and mind, look at the top. First of all, do you know that you have a reputation, yes or no? And then if you do, or if you even never thought about it, just describe it, just in a few words. If you want to use like a sunny day or like a cloudy, stormy day, just take a minute. Top of heart and mind. What's the word on the street of what it's like to step out of the pew and offer your gifts? You don't have to share it with anybody. So a possible next step for you is to go back home and answer the next question. What would be one thing you could change to strengthen that reputation, even if you feel it's strong? Maybe it's not something to further strengthen it, but maybe what do you need to do to keep that reputation? We can lose our reputation tomorrow, right? Isn't that true? We can. So what do you need to sustain? What do you need to continue to do? What is something new to maintain that reputation? We're going to go over several concepts today that will help you answer that question. All right. Outcomes for this session. Equipped to evaluate your parishioner engagement. So one of my joys is words. I love a good lexicon. My husband's a writer. He's in radio, so we have fun with words. And engagement. I've had the opportunity with a lot of the facilitation I've done when people are doing strategic planning at a parish. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that word? So we've had lively conversations about what does it mean, engagement? Oh, gosh, vibrant, when they want to describe themselves. I'm a vibrant parish. What does vibrant mean? What does welcoming mean? So it's important to always clarify. So I'm going to clarify for you how I'm using that word today. So the word engagement for our outcomes today, that people are stepping out of the pew, engaging their gifts and talents, step further, that they eventually more deeply engage their hearts and minds. Like Barb. Barb stepped out of the pew. She engaged her skills, her executive skills, but eventually further engaged her heart and mind and was transformed by way of using their gifts. Identify what might be getting in the way of more parishioner engagement. A check in on your mindset and skill set to invite them out of the pew and share the work of mission. Sometimes we are in our own way. I've also been the executive coach of bishops and priests and lay leaders, and sometimes we have that moment where we say, hey, it's time to get over yourself and get out of the way. And let God, yeah, right? She tells it like it is, doesn't she? Well, that's not me. That's God. So when that moment comes, that's God. But so get over ourselves. Sometimes, even when we're well-meaning, we sabotage the moment. So we're going to take a look at our mindset and maybe how it could be sabotaging this deeper engagement. Be affirmed, be reminded, and learn something new. I am convinced that everyone in this room, some of the concepts I'm going to talk about, you are doing. Thanks be to God, be affirmed. Many things you're hearing over these last few days, you are being affirmed. That's great, because it helps us sustain what we're doing, and we're doing things well, we want to sustain that. Be reminded. Some of the things I may be sharing with you today, you've heard before, and you said to yourself, that would be great, maybe one day we'll get around to it. But today, maybe God is saying, today's the day. I'm reminding you, I really do want you to engage this, right? Or maybe you were doing it, and it no longer is a habit, and God's saying, yeah, I'm nudging you today. You may be reminded in other ways, not just with what I talk about today, but I'm sure there's overlap on some things when I looked at the title of presentations. So there might be a key theme that God is saying, see, over here, I'm reminding you. Okay? And then lastly, of course, our hope is that you learn something today, something new. Identify three things you can do immediately when you get back home. Now, I have a tendency to get stuff done, so for myself, I'd probably give myself a list of 10 because I just like really doing a lot. But I'm not going to give you a list of 10. But my hope is, and my prayer for you, is that you are tuned into God. And out of all that I cover today, that there'll be three things that you can easily do when you get back. Some of the stuff we cover is going to take a little more time. One might be that very first exercise. What's your reputation? What's the parish's reputation? And drill down on that. And there are ways of doing that. We'll talk about that later. You do it with your staff. Maybe you get a focus group together. What is it like when you are asked? That's one thing you can survey. When you are asked to step out of the pew and offer your gifts, how do you respond to that? You can ask them questions, and they'll tell you. Okay. Meaningful relationships, fundamental need. This isn't new to you. The gospel, our church, in so much of her literature, tells us God created us to have meaningful relationships. We thrive when we have meaningful relationships. Secular science agrees. Isn't that great? Agrees with God? So, right, secular science aligns with this. I'm reminded of a study at Harvard. Some of you may be aware of it. 75-year study. They have followed a cohort of people over 75 years. And those that have lived a long life, they will self-identify as a happy life. The one thing they all had in common, meaningful relationships, both in the family and outside the family. Yet how ironic. What are we hearing these days? We have a crisis of what? Loneliness. This is fertile ground. This is our mission field today. With so many other things, but fundamentally, as a human, this is what our mission field is. People are missing out on meaningful relationships. There's a multitude of ways that you can address it. One way is what I am talking about today. It's creating the space for them to step up and say, yeah, I'll step in. I'll offer my gifts and then enter in perhaps what becomes meaningful relationship with others and with Christ. Connect, nurture, and strengthen. There's all kinds of ways that we can help create the space that people have a meaningful relationship with others and with Christ. These are three words. If you look at the very bottom of the handout, ACST Catholic, the organization I'm privileged to work with, this is why we exist. So technology, we're known for our technology, but really our heartbeat, our mission is to put the technology into your hands, consulting and also thought leadership to help you connect with parishioners, to nurture spiritual growth, and to strengthen relationships with Christ. That's what we're going to talk about today. You may not choose these words. Remember, I love words. Like we could say, what do you mean by connect, Denise? What do you mean by nurture, right? We could have those, I love those conversations. But I'm just offering you a drumbeat, a heartbeat, really, a heartbeat. All that you do, perhaps in parish in some way, is prioritized around connecting, nurturing, and strengthening. Optimal engagement requirements. So optimal, what do I mean by that? In its best state. Be not afraid of best state, the ideal state. God wants that for us. It's an opportunity to pause and say, where are we at toward optimal? And let's take a look what optimal engagement is. You are clear on who you are and you know where you are going. Why would I want to be in a relationship with you if I don't know who you are? Okay, minimally, people sit in the pew because, well, I'm a Catholic. This is a Catholic church. And I was raised to sit in this pew, right? We have people that do that. Or I sit in this pew because my grandmother sat in the pew, my mother sat in the pew, I have kids, so now I sit in the pew. But when you want engagement, I want to know who you are. I want to know how you live the gospel out. Because when my husband and I were getting to know each other, we know how that goes. What do you value? How do you operate? Are you going to shrink my clothes when you offer to do the laundry? Right? So, I mean, are there things that you do that align with what's important to me? So that's an operational thing I just mentioned. We'll talk about things we do with parish shrink people's clothes. We'll talk about that later. Right? Okay. You have created a culture that is inviting and supportive. I've seen a lot of the presentations. All of this is talked about. There was one on welcoming today. Yeah, that's challenging, but it has to happen. You prioritize connecting, nurturing, and strengthening, whatever you want to call it. You regularly monitor, assess, and respond along the way. So I'm going to call out someone who I was on the road a lot with, who is my joy, is in the room. Paul Bro, stand up. He's local. Paul, you tell me if I'm wrong. So you can sit down now. But you tell me if I'm wrong. So Paul and I, in the early days when I was out doing leadership development, I worked with priests, and sometimes I had a lay leader that was my partner. Paul and I were on the road a lot together. A lot. We have a lot of stories, right? The best of retreat centers and the worst of retreat centers. That's the name of my book. No. Okay. So one of the things that we all found is we don't regularly do something that's very healthy, and that's to pause and say, what's going well? And what do we need to do differently? We just let things run on autopilot. And so Paul and I, in the work we did over the years, there are some priests in this room that were in our classes. You know who you are, right? So it's good to see you. Regularly assess and then give feedback, and I'll get a little bit more into that. If we don't pause and say what's going well and what we could do differently, it's going to just go flat, and we may never achieve that beauty. So if we discern a beautiful vision of growth in who we are, there's a beautiful horizon that God's calling us to reach. The depth and breadth of it will never make it if we don't pause and say, what are we doing well? What can we do differently? And that's done by pulling the lens back wide, looking at the whole parish, pulling it in a little tighter, looking at different ministries, and even tighter individuals. We do it in that way. You regularly put perceived constraints to the test to determine if they are real. Sometimes those in here that were in Good Leaders, Good Shepherds, we called them assumed constraints. So what are these? So God is stirring our hearts, and we're discerning a good to do. It could be a new ministry that we're going to start. It could be that strategic plan of that growth for the future. And then all of a sudden, we get dogged in our mind. Yeah, that sounds nice, but no one will step up. Yeah, we just don't have enough people to help do that. That costs a lot of money. We did that before, and it didn't work. Why would it work today? Be careful. So this is something that happens in us. Our past experiences influencing today's decisions. Not realizing that today could be a different day. And it is a different day. Different people. God's working on hearts and minds. before the people said no. Today their heart may be ready to say yes. So I'm reminded of one of our priest learning consultants that came out with us, Monsignor Michael Glenn, God rest his soul. He was in the Archdiocese of Denver. And when we were doing this with priests, he told a great story. When he was a young pastor, God was inspiring him, and different things were coming up for him to consider and do. And then in his own mind, he was saying, when I look around, I just don't think we can do this. This is disheartening. Or staff, because he was new to the parish, staff or maybe some key parishioners were giving him feedback saying, oh, Father, we did that before. That just doesn't work. He was feeling very disheartened. So he talked to his priest mentor, and what his priest mentor said to him, Michael, God will pay for what he orders. Your job is to get the order right. So what does this mean? If you have prayerfully discerned a direction and some action to take, and you start hearing in your mind we don't have the resources to do it, don't let that get in the way of your yes to God's will for next steps. Test it. Make sure it's a true constraint. There are real constraints out there. But we often kill some beautiful ideas because we assume there's a constraint and there really isn't. It's my personal opinion that when we allow ourselves to fall into perceived constraints, that it is a direct threat to God's will for us. This is critical. If there's one thing you take away from this presentation, whenever you feel a constraint, challenge it. Say, hey, are you really a constraint or not? Okay, let's keep moving. You have a strong bench of disciples who make other disciples. Amen, amen, thank you, yes, please. We've been hearing that for a while. We've been working on that for a while. It's critical to optimal engagement. And why is that critical to optimal engagement? Because they will help you with your reputation, and they'll also help move people who come in transactionally and help move them along spiritually, like Barb. Optimal engagement is more than 7%. When you hear 7%, who do you think of? Who's Matthew Kelly, right, yeah. So Matthew Kelly, for those of you that don't know, did some research, and what they found out is that 7% of the parishioners do all the heavy lifting, whether it means bringing their gifts forward and being the hands and feet or the money, right, offering their contributions. We've got to break this number. We have to break this number. We celebrate the 7%, but we have to prioritize that. If you want optimal engagement, you must prioritize ways to break that 7%. Even if a regular priority, a regular goal year after year is to just increase that percentage. This year, we're going to create a plan and increase it to 8%. Next year, we're going to create a plan and increase it to 9%. Don't overwhelm yourself, but increase that. Stewardship and expression of discipleship. I know you all know this is the case. We're not going to go deep into discipleship, but I think it's important, and this is something that you can do when you get back home, is to really take stock. What's your discipleship bench, if you will, like? So on the bottom of page one, this is an activity that you can do with your colleagues back at the parish or at the diocese, or maybe pull some people together from the pew. So what percentage of your parishioners step up and into ministry because of their discipleship? What is driving them? So there's a percentage that may do it. Do you have a formal process to form disciples and send them out? Is it effective? How are you measuring this? And why not? When will the time be right? Well, I have an opinion about that. To not do it, the time is wrong. There's no time. We have no time to not do it. We have absolutely no time. So this is something that maybe you can take away and pause on and reflect on, saying, where are we? How have we prioritized this? As opposed to reading a book. There's a lot of great books out there and being inspired by a book. But step out of those pages and take some action. If you don't have disciples offering their time and talent, it'll be more transactional rather than life-changing, which is okay as long as they don't stay there. If it's one transactional thing after another over time, they're just not going to keep coming back. Remember Barb, my friend? It was transactional for her. I give you my talents, you give me my pew whenever I want to sit in it. but then it became more than that. It was life-changing. How are you leveraging these entry points? What we're going to talk about today, there's going to be many entry points that you can leverage to help them through. All right, we're going to move on to page number 2 and look at why they say yes and why they say no. So why do people step out of the pews and offer their gifts? People invest their time, energy, and focus in what they value. They run their credit card. They put things on their calendar for what they value. There's a variety of ways that you can identify what they value. One is to watch what they spend their money on, how they spend their time, what they talk about that they do. There's all kinds of instruments that you can do to find out what the people value. We actually have a tool called Mission Insight. Have any of you in here heard of Mission Insight or use it? Yeah, so Mission Insight can help you not only understand deeper demographics about the person, but that helps you understand in your particular parish boundary what they value, how they spend their time and money, and what they believe. So it connects them. So what's important is what we offer, and not the what, but how we offer it speaks to what they value. And they say yes because it feeds them. It's feeding them in some way. And we need to be mindful of that. All right, let's go through this list. I'm not going to elaborate on everything. You'll notice that there are marks where you can check it off. An activity you can do is to mark off the top 5 or 7 that exist. And when you take a look at the people that are, maybe it's 7%, if you look at the 7%, what are the reasons why they step out? We'll take a look at how you can use this list later, but maybe track. And as we go through this, track off, yeah, we have it. Or maybe circle it and say we don't, and this might be a good thing for us to develop. All right, the first one, for the love of Christ and his mission, yay, right? That's what we want. And there are people that do that. Barb does that now, right? That's great. They perceive the work as meaningful and important, so they may not do it out of Christ and his mission. It was important to Barb. It became meaningful, and then it was because of her love of Christ and the mission. So we have to not only create opportunities that can be meaningful and important to people, but that when we invite them, that we speak to them, help them make those connections. There is a welcoming culture that feels like home. We'll talk a little bit about that shortly. It's life-giving to engage time and talent. It fills a deep need. Clarity about who you are and where you are going to fulfill his mission. So this one's a big one. We talked about having a strong bench of disciples as foundational. This is foundational too. I'm going to say some of you maybe because of the synodal process that's been going on, maybe some of you are entering into a strategic plan. That's really what this is. Some of you maybe aren't ready to take this on. If now's not the time, perhaps maybe thinking about in the future, when do we do this? Because remember, it's important to know who you are, then I can say, I want to be in relationship with you. It's important to know where you're going so that you just don't keep spinning and doing the same thing and over again. You know, I'm reminded of a moment in Alice in Wonderland when she was trying to get through Wonderland and she came across the Cheshire Cat and there was a fork in the road. I do a really bad British accent, but here it goes. So she said, please, sir, which way do I go? Do I go left or do I go right? And he said, well, where do you want to be? She goes, it doesn't much matter to me. And he goes, well, if it doesn't much matter to you, it doesn't much matter if you go left or right. Right? So really, what would that moment was, if you don't know where you want to go, it doesn't matter where you go. Having clarity about who you are and where you go is critical. So what is this? This is a clear, discerned 3 to 5 year vision of growth for the future. This is not a vision that is aspirational and kind of hangs out there and inspires everybody rallies around it. It is a true future state of growth. You assess the current state. You discern where God wants you to grow. It's like we're going to go from here. We're going to go to Starbucks. That's clear, right? That destination of Starbucks is clear. That's what you need. Also, a well-thought-out plan on how to realize that growth, well-thought-out and acted upon. On target, ongoing tracking and assessment of the implementation of the plan. That's another way I talked about that we need to assess how we're doing. Again, today is the day where there's a lot of technology that supports this. You need right temporal tools for this. So there's a variety of solutions. There's many vendors that are here, sponsors here that offer solutions. Ours is ministry platform. It'll give you an opportunity to track this, also do pulse checks, but make sure that you have the right tools to help you further assess and engage this. Define core values that are consistently and repeatedly demonstrated by all staff and parishioners. If there's one thing you do on this slide, even if you don't have the where we're going, pause and say, what really are our core values? When we look at how we operate together and how people interact together, how would we describe what we value as a parish? Discern what those need to be and then live by them. The sad thing about what's on this screen, I've seen it over and over again. They put a lot of work into this and then it falls flat. There's no follow through. When I've stood before so many parish teams that are going to be doing this, and I ask them after I introduce the process to them, I ask them, so what's your hopes and what are your concerns? Invariably, someone says, we've done this before. We put a lot of work into it. We never did anything with it. You need to follow through. So if you articulate core values describe what you believe and how you're going to act. So it clarifies. So if you want to have a core value around welcoming or hospitality, you need to define that, and then you need to operationalize it. You need to be clear about how we live that out. And then you need to, as staff and also parishioners, whether they're volunteering using their time, doesn't matter. Even when they're just milling around the parish, that they all are led by those values. If there's one thing you can do is pause and articulate those values. We'll talk a little bit in a minute. Well, the minute is now. Okay, so values and operating guidelines. So you want to assess the fruits of how you operate and how you relate and interact with each other. So some of the things that kill why people, we're about to go into the list of why they say no, disorganization, waste of my time, hasn't been very pleasant. People sometimes can be a little mean, Sue's experience, right? Yep, we're shaking our heads. We know it happens. And no one really knows how to run a meeting. No one really knows how decisions are made. Our hands are tied all the time. When we clarify ways that we're all held accountable to interact with each other through values, and there are some clear operating guidelines, how meetings are ran, how decisions are made. There's a long list. We don't have to go into that. That creates a culture and creates a space that people want to say yes. I remember one conversation, this is on the no side, one conversation where I overheard someone talking about how she was very excited that she's going to retire and she wants to offer, you know, all of the corporate skills that she had, she wants to offer them to the parish. And someone yelled out to her, don't, they'll suck the life out of you. And that came from someone who, that doesn't feel good. I know you laughed, but it happens, right? You can create operationally a way of working so it doesn't suck the life out of them. It actually fills them with life, right? Yeah. Okay. All right. Oh, I want to go back to that slide. Hold on. That last comment is important. Don't guess. Ask. So, right? You don't want to guess what your values are. You don't want to say, well, operationally, we're solid and we're strong. You ask. That's another way. So this is not about surveying people to death. This is about hearing from the people in a way that creates the culture, by the way, of feedback. If you create a culture of regularly, we care. We care how we serve you. We care how we interact with each other. The only way we can get better, or as my buddy Paul Bro says, better. Did I just make fun of his accent? I did. He knows I do all the time, right? So we want to be able to reach out and understand because we don't want to guess at the trends. We want to know the trends. Again, there's good technology out there to help you do that. Why they say yes. Let's keep moving through this. Consistent, effective communication across all ministries, groups, and in general. That's an operational thing. People know where things are. People know where to go. They know what's going on. When I worked for the Catholic Leadership Institute, they have a survey, and one of the results of the survey tells you the top five drivers of why someone would strongly recommend their parish. So one would think, of course, Father's on there, you know, that they would strongly recommend their pastor. Some of the things that we think would be on there, the liturgies, our life-giving. One thing that was very practical and interesting in the top five is they know where information can be found. That's one of the top five drivers of why someone would strongly recommend their parish. Why would I want to engage at the parish if there's a lot of confusion? Communication and regular communication is critical. Okay, events, meetings are well organized. So I've already talked a little bit about events and meetings. By the way, all of these are opportunities for you to reach out to those sitting in the pew like myself that do some of these things professionally. Just ask someone as far as, you know, we really don't know how to run meetings well, and we know that you do that in your day-to-day life. It could simply be, could you create a process for us and train us on it and help us? How lovely. How lovely to ask them to do that. There's plenty of them that can help you with all of these. Communication, too. So other reasons they say yes, check an item off the I'm a good person list. Okay, maybe not so compelling. Maybe not, but I'll take that. Is that what you said? I'll take that? Right, we'll take that, but let's not just take it, right? Let's expand and nurture it. So that's a connect. Let's nurture it and let's strengthen it. It's an entry point. So like Barb, she didn't do it because she's a good person. She wanted her pew. But some people feel like, well, I should be doing these things to be a good person, right? That's an entry point. Leverage it. Don't just let it sit there, because if they keep doing it out of that, at some point they're going to find something else that's going to make them feel like a good person and not give you their time, energy, and focus. The pastor or fellow parishioners asked and they felt obligated. You'll take it, right? So we're grateful that they, right? We're grateful that they do, but we don't want to leave it there. That's an entry point. So if you want to rouse engagement and you want to sustain engagement, move them beyond these more transactional ways that they do it. Kids are going to school or religious ed, right? We hear that a lot, that parents, you know, I help out at the parish, and then as soon as their kids are out of the system, you don't see them ever again. Now, how lovely would it be that, yes, they help out with ways in school and religious ed, but then now, finally, I can do something else in the parish. Wouldn't that be awesome? As opposed to, I've done it, my kids are, you know, the kids graduate and leave the church, and they do too. Yeah, no, we don't want that. And then, of course, lastly, no one else will do it, and it needs to be done. So some of us have personalities where it doesn't matter. We just can't stand the fact that someone keeps asking. If they ask one more time, I'll just step up and do it. Okay, an entry point, right? And then it meets social needs. Thanks be to God, right? I'll take it. Fertile ground, meaningful relationships, pull them out of isolation. All of this is beautiful, fertile ground. Okay. Why they say no. Shorter list, but a powerful list. Perceived time constraints. Perceived. Sometimes they really are time constraints, sometimes they aren't. I've had executive coaches over my career, and one of my executive coaches, we were talking about some things that were critical for me to work on. And I remember complaining, like a lot of people do, I don't have time for that. There's so much going on. I'm traveling so much. This was years ago. And he said, Denise, you have the same amount of time that I do and everyone does, 24 hours. It's how you prioritize your time. I have done some facilitation at parishes where people have three kids in diapers. They find a way to offer their time because it's meaningful, it's valuable. They're typically the ones that have a deeper relationship with Christ. But sometimes we have to help them see that it's not going to be such a burden. And this is hard. If you really believe their skills are critical, sometimes we have to have the conversation about, well, maybe there's some other things you do at the parish that we stop having you do for a while. You don't like that, do you? Take it somewhere at his hands. But sometimes we have to have that conversation with them because this is meaningful work, and we're helping them get to that. Now imagine someone who you're having a conversation with, how important their skills are, and you've discerned that you want to invite them in, and you're actually having the conversation, well, how can I help you process through maybe what's going on, and we can try to help you make this work out? How powerful is that? That it makes it so important, right? Okay. Don't know what's available. I've heard people say that, right? I don't even know what's available. Make sure that there's plenty available and that you are communicating on a regular basis. A lot of great technology out there to help you do that. Don't know what talents they have to offer and how they fit. I saw that there are some sessions on that here. Sometimes, you know, some people, they say, well, you know, I didn't have a corporate career. I didn't have whatever. I'm always hearing about these people with those skills, et cetera. Just some basic skills like the strength finders, people who like to get stuff done, and people who are efficient, people who think things out, right? We need those gifts and talents. And so they need help showing how those things fit. Heard it's disorganized and time-wasting. We've said that enough. Nothing seems fresh and appealing, always the same thing over and over again, right? So it's the same old stuff. Why would I want to keep, you know, a step forward if, like, here we go again? More of a consumer than a contributor. Okay, right. So I used to call it the PBS syndrome, but let's update it. It's the Wikipedia syndrome, right? So a lot of us go to Wikipedia, right? And every now and again, a little thing pops up and says, hey, you know, we need a little support, and they're asking for a little donation. But, and I'm guilty of it, I exit out, and I'm more of a consumer than I am a contributor. So ideally, they say no because they have more of this consumer mindset that you're just here to serve me, and it's a one-way transaction, if you will. Yeah, we want to move them from being a consumer to a contributor. Staff and others are difficult to work with. I know that's hard to hear. No one in here is that. I know that. And I know you're thinking about your colleagues that are. Stop that. Okay. But it happens. And, you know, they don't mean to be difficult. It's just they don't know any better. That's part of creating a culture that invites engagement, is really having everyone learn about what gifts they bring to the table, values that guide their behavior that are more inviting and supportive. No room for me. Ministry squatters are always doing it year after year. Yeah, that's a term that came to my mind one day, and I stuck with it. It says a lot, doesn't it? And you know why ministry squatters exist? We let them exist. It's our fault. Because I'll take it, because they keep saying yes, right? And they check it off my list. I get it. I get where you're coming from. What's your name?
Mitzi.
Mitzi, I get where you're coming from. It's like I need someone to take care of this, and I don't have time to go out and really further recruit. But we've got to be careful about that mindset. Yeah, we've got to be careful about that mindset. So we don't want ministry squatting to continue. So how do we shift someone who's been doing something for 20 or 30 years? Little difficult. That's a bigger conversation to have, but one thing to consider is that it's time for them to become a mentor and start to create the space for someone else to do. They still have a role. It still is in the realm of what they enjoy, but have them start to mentor other people. Okay, create a culture that smells good. Take it in. Doesn't that smell good? Before I got married, I lived in several apartment buildings and eventually bought my own condo. And every building, so I'm the daughter of Italian immigrants, and you can go ahead and stereotype me, I'm a good cook, and I do cook a lot. So invariably, when I would step out of my apartment and my neighbors are walking down, oh, it's you. Every time I walk by your apartment at night, it smells so good. I am so tempted to knock on your door and ask for some. You want them to knock on the door and ask for some. And you set the table. I did hold pasta dinners all the time for my friends that looked like this. And you want to set the table so there's something for them to come in and feast from. Right? Okay. Create a culture that welcomes. Here we go with those words. You're going to have to define what it means for you, but what I have next to it are outcomes from it. However you define it, I am known here. I want to hang out here. encourages, I'm affirmed and fed here, promotes and facilitates growth, I am important here, supports through clarity, organization, productivity, this is valuable and good use of my time, offers a variety of opportunities to engage outside of mass, something for everyone here, right? So that is a culture that smells good. Again, we could have a whole session unpacking all of those. So maybe one of your next steps is to go back and unpack that. Do we have those outcomes? And if not, how can we get to those outcomes? Save your best for God. You've heard that before. I'm sure there have been presentations here over and over again. So this is where Denise gets the face. Denise is known for the face. When I'd be facilitating with lay leaders or priests, and we talk about asking the laity, and we talk about really creating a role that has some substance to it, and we're asking for them to lead by these values, that we have expectations for them, and we're holding them accountable. And I'm saying, listen to you. God, just because they don't get paid, that's what I hear. They don't get paid. I can't ask that of them. God doesn't get crumbs. We save our best for God. What a moment of formation. What a moment. So we meet them where they're at. Not everyone can hear that fully and robustly in the moment, although I'm one of those people that will tell them. I try not to anymore. I try to listen to the Holy Spirit than myself. But we meet them where they're at. And we help them understand, and they build. They build into that. Okay, a few more things. From consumer to contributor, so that's the journey. We want them to move from consumer. And by the way, those that are on your discipleship bench, some of them are consumers. A consumer doesn't necessarily not someone who is just sitting in the pew just because they're Catholic. Many of us. So we want to move from consumer to contributor. It takes time. An inviting culture operationally and relationally. So if you can think of that higher level, are we inviting operationally? Are things done well here? Is it easy to get stuff done? Do people know where things are at? Is it difficult to move something forward? Are decisions made well and timely and relationally? Had a conversation with someone on Tuesday at lunch, and we were talking about a spiritual life. And he believes one of the core things he contributes to sanctifying the world is to be cheerful. That struck me. Cheerful, right? So relationally, he brings a cheerfulness and creates relationship. Clarity on who you are and where you're going. We already talked about that. Constant and consistent messaging, engaging, inviting, lifting up, and celebrating the outcomes. Movement in the parish. A constant movement in the parish. Constant movement. All right, let's look at a few things. Before you invite, be clear on the role and expectations. This means for someone like Barb, who is going to be on a very extensive process team for 8 months, all the way down to our fall festivals coming up, those that are selling the tickets. So this sounds like a lot of work. Give them a paper, almost like a job description, that defines the role, clarifies the time commitment, has those values that you expect them to lead by and be guided by. That's the way you engage them. This works well. And then if you do have clarity about who you are, your mission, your vision, connect the work to that. That takes someone who is more transactional to considering, wow, this is really important. It's not just selling tickets. It's like that there's an old story about at NASA. Some people say it's not real, but I like the story anyway. So JFK was walking around NASA, and he was asking people, what do you do here, what do you do here? And, of course, asking scientists, et cetera. Then he asked someone who clearly was on the cleaning crew, and he said, well, what do you do here? She goes, I send astronauts to the moon. He goes, really, how do you do that? She goes, I make sure they have clean bathrooms so that they have a good experience and that they can continue to think and be scientists and move on, right? So selling tickets at a fall festival can be discipleship making. It can. Okay. It's not an ask, it's an invitation. It's not an ask. An ask is, would you get this for me? Will you do this for me? It's an invitation into discipleship. It's an invitation into an opportunity. So often when we ask, we do it with a very apologetic way. I know you're really busy. And really, it won't take much time. What does that say about the work? It's not important, and that's not what we want, right? If we want their gifts, this is God's work. This is important stuff. Yeah, to be the face of Christ when you're selling tickets is big stuff. People come from all over the place. That's a big role, to sell tickets and be the face of Christ to others. Absolutely. Okay, onboard them with care and intention. So go over that role description with them. And then also the care is that you are giving them feedback. You're checking in with them. How's it going? Give them some suggestions. If they need some help, develop them. So you're saying to yourself, we only have so many hands and feet here. Perhaps there are some people sitting in the pew that are executive coaches that know how to give feedback. Maybe they're the people that help you do that. That they check in with people. There are ways of getting this done. Make room for them. Eliminate ministry squatters. Stop ministry squatting today. If there's one thing you can do, is stop it. Create tag team roles that share the load. So think about, rather than one person carrying the load, that they can tag team. So if you have values, someone can say, well, someone always ends up doing the heavy lifting when a couple people share it. If they're guided by values, and one of those values, make sure that they share the load. It won't happen. It'll be a good experience. It'll be a meaningful experience. It'll be a meaningful relationship. Form effective collaborative teams. 60% of teams fail. Right, Paul? 60%?
60%.
Yeah, Paul does beautiful work leading teams. So a lot of times we need teams to get work done. Set them up to succeed. Make sure they're clear on what their purpose is. Make sure they have values they've agreed upon and how to work together. They're clear on their goals and they're clear on their operating guidelines. Onboarding, connect them and equip them. So this is when you're sitting down with them. Just a little bit more detail here. Tell them about the parish story. Give them a little context. This is who you are in relationship with. Mission, vision of growth, action plan to achieve it. I've already said some of this stuff. Values, orientation to the role, applicable development, just mentioned that, feedback and guidance, we already went over that, help them understand their talents and how they can be utilized. So when you invite, make sure you're clear about the skill you see that they have and weave it tightly to the work. Weave it tightly to the work. Okay, I want to have a little time for questions, so I'm going to go through. There's on the last page, there's some information about mindset. I'm just going to pop out two key things about mindset. You're welcome to read the back page. I suggest that you do. So mindset is a mental attitude or inclination, a fixed state of mind. This is one of those things as a self-leader that we can either get in our way or get out of our way, right? Carol Dweck. Beautiful research and what she did about mindset, that some of us operate out of a fixed mindset, some of us operate out of a growth mindset. A fixed mindset ultimately says this is as good as it gets. A growth mindset is we can form and develop basic qualities and abilities. If you have a mindset that's fixed, you will not get optimal engagement. It'll just be the same old thing over and over again, right? We need a growth mindset. This is all on the other page. I'm going to advance here because we don't have time. So it's we have to consider what our mindset is. Okay. So I just want to tie the bow on it here. So this is my first time speaking at ICSC. And when I was talking to Michael Murphy, he made it very clear, don't say the V word. I did once. I did pretty good, right? I only said volunteer once. I slipped. But he was, and for good reason. It was very compelling to me that he said, the ICSC, you've spent decades, or not decades, years, considering really what is the word. Remember, I love words, and I was fascinated with why the shift was from not using the word volunteer. So he said, sometimes they're referred to as ministers, sometimes they're referred to as champions. So it got me thinking, I'm like, what would be a good word to use to describe the person like myself that steps out of the pew, I'm not getting paid, and I'm offering my gifts. So I did a search. I started asking people I know that work in parishes. I started asking family. Well, the most compelling conversation was with my nephew Ken and his wife Laura. They're both diocesan staff in the Diocese of Manchester. Laura used to be an English teacher, and she loves the root of words. So this is the title that Laura came up with. Amateur. And I said, amateur? She goes, that doesn't feel very good, does it? I said, no, because it's used in a negative way. So what she went to, the root of the word, is amater, which means to do it out of love. To bring our skills to, I don't do it because I get paid. I do it out of love. And Colossians instructs us to do it out of love. Whatever you do from the heart, as for the Lord and not for others. So while we probably won't use the word amateur, my hope is today that I've offered you some things that you connected to so that you can create the space and lead the people so that they do it out of love and ultimately the love of Christ. So we have a few minutes left. I went a little bit over. Thank you for your patience. Any questions? Do you have any questions? Yeah, a lot of them. Well, ACS Technologies, come to our booth, and I'd be more than happy to answer those questions. But anything right now that I can help you with? Yes?
What's your take on the word voluntold?
Voluntold. So that, right, that goes to obligation, right? Yeah, that I'm obligated because someone voluntold me. Or I don't quite know how to say no, right? So it's a, I think the word is useful because it tells us about a dynamic that's going on, and I think it's a dynamic that we need to stop. Yeah, but it's fun. It's a fun word. It's fun play on words. I like play on words, too. Other questions? Yes. So is the question, how do I not create future generations of ministry squatters?
Yeah.
So one of the things that you can do, and it's in the handout, is have terms for roles. Even for Eucharistic minister and lecturing. My husband and I, at one point, we were, because I traveled so much, I traveled almost every week, that we could just be Eucharistic ministers and lectors. And what was happening at our parish, it happens at others, we weren't on the schedule that week, we'd come to Mass, and we wouldn't see anybody. We know who the Eucharistic ministers are, we didn't see them in the church at all, and you're waiting, and then it's time for the Eucharistic ministers to step up, and no one's going, and then we would step up. That happened a lot. So what I did is I told my husband one day, I said, we need to step back. New people need to come in, and they need to create a process. So I gave feedback to Father on that and told him why we were stepping back. But they had terms. There should be terms on it. There should be terms. And another reason why, even though these ministry squatters are beautifully engaged and have gifts to offer, they're doing something the same way that may be effective, but there could be some fresh new ideas and new people that could bring in and breathe even more new life into that. Yes?
We always say that if somebody that sits around for a long time in a missionary activity, they care very much about that activity.
Yes.
And we say to them, if you care that much about it, you need to let somebody else move. Otherwise, it will die when you move away.
Excellent.
If you care about it, make it live, make it grow. And if not, just do it. If it depends on you.
I love that. So then when you start, so this is part of the culture, right? And part of operationally, you're talking about some operational ways to operate at the parish. And the reason for it is we want it to live. And if we want it to live, we need to have terms so that people can step in. And by the way, not everyone can do this, but something that's effective is the person who's coming to the end of their term, their responsibility is to go recruit or to at least bring names to you of people they think, and that they speak to them and tell them about what it's like. We have a hand up here, and then we'll go over here. Right here first.
Hi. One of the things is I recently went to a new parish, and everybody's been there in the same position for years.
Easy, yeah. Right. Well, no, they probably haven't. Right. Yeah, and those, so let me just say, I've had many conversations with priests and lay leaders. Just because it's a difficult conversation, we should still have it. Don't let a difficult conversation and hurting people's feelings not step forward. Find a way. Find a way, and really sometimes, you know, this happened to me in my corporate life, but I've heard when I've shared this story with parish leaders, they said that it happened. So, hear this in the right way. I don't have difficulty firing people. That doesn't mean I like to do it, but I don't care to do it, but I can step into it and have the difficult conversation. And I can't tell you how many times people said, thank you. I've been wanting to do it and I couldn't do it. And they could be there. I know we're running out of time. Let's go to Father here and then can we go here? Are we okay, Margaret, to do two more? We'll get one posted.
We will make sure that it is posted for you, so if you need another one or want to download it for staff, we will have it available.
Okay, thank you, Margaret. Father.
In our diocese, a lot of the ministries require fingerprinting and all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle bringing people, because a lot of people don't want to get fingerprinted and go through all of that stuff. How do you handle that?
That's a good question. So my first response to that is they're not ready for the deep meaning of the work, right? Does anybody else encounter this, and do you have a way that you respond favorably to it? So she said that she brings some reasons why, and we have to connect it to them. But to your point, I have some family members that I don't care. I'll find another way to serve God. I do. And you know, sometimes they're just going to say no. One more question, and I know we have to go. Yes, David.
I understand that different personalities have different motivating factors and different trends amongst generations.
Yes.
But when extending an invitation en masse, do you find that it's more effective to appeal to what they're going to get out of it, or more effective to appeal to the need that they're going to meet and that fulfilling?
Always what's in it for me.
Yeah.
Okay, even though that sounds really shallow, always what's in it for me. And it may be that I please my God.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, but it's always what's in it for me.
Yeah,
yeah. And I would say you don't want to throw the net out wide. If you're throwing a wide net out, it's about opportunities.
Yeah.
But there should be more personal, intentional invitations. Yeah. Okay, I think we need to clear the room out. Thank you all. Come to our booth, ACS Technologies, if you have any more questions.